The following is provided through the IAAIS Program Share Service.
Hello, and welcome to this week's World Traveler. I'm Leah Blackman with the Virginia Voice. Our first article is from the New York Times. For many of us, traveling is an inescapably visual experience. We sightsee and snap photographs. We prioritize rooms with views. We gaze at artworks, at architecture, at nature. For blind travelers, though, the world reveals itself differently. To find out how, a writer joined a 10-day journey through northern India on a tour designed for the visually impaired. Here's what he learned. Sights unseen. What travel is like for those who can't see. Serving as a sighted guide in India helped a writer discover new layers of experience and a deeper way of visualizing the world. By Andy Isaacson. A freelance writer and photojournalist, Andy Isaacson guided blind travelers around holy cows, muddy potholes, and whizzing rickshaws while reporting and shooting this story. April 7th, 2026. Luke walked beside me, one hand curled around my arm, the other tapping a gentle rhythm with his white cane. We were crossing the Taj Mahal's grounds just after sunrise, the air already balmy and faintly perfumed. From the scattered murmur of tourists, Luke said he could sense a grand open space around us. I described the Persian-style gardens, reflecting pools, clipped shrubs, stone walkways, and perfect symmetry. Then I read aloud a sign, "Don't make direct eye contact with monkeys." Near the mausoleum's entrance, the ground changed, rough sandstone yielding to cool marble, smooth beneath our feet. I guided Luke's hands to the white facade, and he traced the stone inlay as he had at the nearby Agra Fort. Vines, blossoms, and precise geometric patterns cut from lapis lazuli, red jasper, and onyx. Some surfaces felt chalky, others slick as glass. As his fingers roamed, Luke recalled the photographs he'd seen as a child before retinitis pigmentosa, a hereditary eye disease, gradually narrowed his vision and then at 18 took it away. "I get the impression of something opulent and magnificent," he told me. Inside, we joined the flow of tourists circling the tombs of Shah Jahan and his beloved Mumtaz Mahal. Their voices echoed beneath the dome, drawn out into long, soft reverberations. In the past, this space carried recitations of the Quran, with acoustics meant to evoke the sound of paradise. Luke tilted his head toward the ceiling. "It's almost like you're inside a speaker," he said. I closed my eyes and listened. What does it mean to travel somewhere new and not be able to see it? That question led me on a 10-day journey through northern India's Golden Triangle with Travel Eyes, a British tour company that pairs visually impaired and sighted travelers. So much of the language we use around travel, sightseeing, scenic vistas, must-see lists, assumes that the world is best or only understood through the eyes. But as the writer Pico Iyer wrote to me in an email before the trip, travel is not about seeing the sights so much as opening oneself up to the unfamiliar, a matter of perception and vision and a deeper sense. For years, whenever I returned from a trip abroad, a friend of mine would ask, "What did it smell like?" I always fumbled for a meaningful answer. What layers of experience, what deeper kind of vision had I been missing? Amar Latif, a British entrepreneur, founded Travelize in 2004 to address the lack of accessible travel options for blind and visually impaired people. After losing most of his sight by age 18 because of retinitis pigmentosa, Mr. Latif struggled to travel independently. Mainstream tour companies often rejected him, insisting he bring a caregiver and excluding him from more adventurous activities like hiking and skiing. Those exclusions pushed him to create something of his own, a company that would allow blind travelers to explore the world without relying on friends or family. "Friends and family switch off," he told me. "They're not as eager to describe things." Travelize runs on a simple but radical model. It pairs blind and sighted travelers as equal companions. Sighted participants assist with navigation and describe visual details in exchange for a discounted trip, while blind travelers bring a fresh perspective that often deepens the experience for both. The company promises a truly multi-sensory travel experience with itineraries designed to engage all five senses. Destinations include Cuba, Eswatini, and Britain's Lake District, among many others. And trips often include immersive tactile experiences, paragliding in the Canary Islands, kneading pizza dough in a Tuscan farmhouse, handling museum artifacts typically kept behind glass. On Lake Titicaca in Peru, locals built a miniature reed island for Travelize visitors to explore by touch. In Xi'an, China, they were granted rare permission to feel the terracotta warriors. To me, India, with its sensory onslaught of honking horns, potent smells, vivid colors, spices, and heat, seemed like the perfect place to experience travel in its fullest, most immersive form. After I booked my trip, Travelize sent me a sighted guide pack, a short primer. "Don't be nervous," it began. "Guiding may seem daunting, but once you get into the swing of it, nothing could be easier." No prior experience was required. Just a friendly attitude and a willingness to describe what you saw. Each day, I'd be paired with a different visually impaired traveler, referred to as a VI, and together we'd find our rhythm. I met the group at a hotel in New Delhi. Among the travelers were two women, one visually impaired, who had met on a previous Travelize trip. This was now their sixth journey together. On our first day, I was paired with Daniel, a 38-year-old software consultant from Oxford. It was his 12th Travelize trip. He previously visited Romania, Bhutan, and Jordan. Daniel had several eye conditions, including nystagmus, which causes involuntary eye movement and makes it difficult to focus or judge depth. He often held his phone just inches from his eyes. On a visit to Old Delhi, I guided Daniel barefoot through a Jain temple, fragrant with wafting incense and filled with soft instrumental music, and into the adjoining bird hospital, a rather crowded and grimy convalescent home for the winged and wounded. He gripped my arm lightly, reading shifts in elevation through subtle cues in the movement of my body. I told him when steps were coming, how many, and in which direction. For tight entryways, I walked ahead with my guiding arm behind me. I felt like I was getting into the swing of it. Strolling in pairs through the tight, noisy streets of Old Delhi, a group of 18 made for a curious sight. It struck me how rare it is to see so many visually impaired travelers moving together, especially in a place that feels overwhelming even for the sighted. We navigated uneven pavement, wove around men carting guavas and sacks of cement. Susie, our tour manager, called out obstacles. Rickshaw passing on your left. We ducked beneath tangled wires and tin awnings, sidestepping muddy puddles and motorbikes, holy cows and dog feces. Shifting waves of scent washed over us. Spice, metal, diesel, cooking oil. As our tour bus crawled through Delhi's snarling traffic, Daniel reflected on how blind and visually impaired people make sense of the world. Everyone builds a world in their own way, he said. Some rely on the spatial qualities of sound, others on scent, or even the feel of air moving around them. Even sighted people use some combination of these elements, he pointed out. But when you're deprived of one, you compensate with the others, and everyone does that differently. The next day, on our drive to Agra, I was paired with Candy, a blind woman from Seattle who works in taxpayer advocacy at the Internal Revenue Service. Born with glaucoma, she could once detect light and the presence of large objects, but her vision gradually deteriorated. A decade ago, at 40, she had one eye removed and now has an ocular prosthesis. The whole sights thing doesn't thrill me, she said. What excited her were immersive, hands-on experiences, zip lining, rappelling down waterfalls, whitewater rafting. On a previous travelized trip to Peru, she rode a rickety train and leaned out the window, arms in the wind, as if she were on a roller coaster. In Costa Rica, she tried surfing. Candy said she wanted to hear about the reality of India. She preferred descriptions of people, their behavior and appearances, over scenery. Tell me what they're doing, she said, even if it's just someone lying on a bench or sleeping on the sidewalk. That's more interesting to me than, there's a tree over here with yellow leaves. I peered out the bus window. Along the roadside were barbers who'd hung mirrors on fences, shaving customers perched on low stools, and flower vendors threading marigold garlands. I told Candy how cars here drive on the left and how clearly marked lane lines were almost universally ignored. Vendors had strung multicolored snack packets across the fronts of their stands like strands of vibrant beads. Oh, that's interesting, she said. We passed six-story apartment blocks with laundry fluttering from open windows. She said, and a lot of places in the stage, you can't do that. At a truck stop cafeteria where we had lunch, I described the triangular structure of a samosa and the ingredients in dal, then used clock face references to guide Candy to each item on her tray. She paid for the meal, carefully handling the rupee notes, colorful textured bills adorned with traditional Indian motifs and Gandhi's portrait at the center. I described those to her too. I was beginning to notice how speaking these details aloud sharpened my perception. Things I might have otherwise overlooked or skimmed past, the kind of prosaic elements that quietly define a place, like the black and white stripes on New Delhi's curbs, or the mandala murals painted on highway overpasses became more visible to me when I put them into words. In naming them, I was also etching them into memory. In Agra, we joined the early morning crowds jockeying for photographs of the Taj Mahal at dawn, its pale glowing silhouette mirrored in the long reflecting pool. They took a bunch of blind people to watch the sunrise. Kind of funny. And a visually impaired traveler from England, said Riley. We toured the site in pairs. One sighted guide told me she described the dome mausoleum to her partner as a giant Hershey's kiss. One visually impaired traveler recalled his time inside the mausoleum as being deeply moving. I heard this low, generic hum, almost like an om, filling the space from people quietly talking, he told me. I realized that everyday conversation had created this peaceful resonance, like a background chant. Sighted people probably wouldn't even hear it. They're too busy snapping photos. We eventually arrived in Ranthambore, a town in Rajasthan near a national park that was once the private hunting grounds of the Jaipur royal family. Today, it's considered one of the best places in India to spot wild Bengal tigers. Before our safari in the hotel gift shop, I placed a tiger figurine in Candy's hands. She ran her fingers along its long torso and stout legs, tracing the raised stripes. Oh, wow, she said. It's much longer than I thought. We toured the park in an open-top bus, its diesel engine rattling as we bounced along rutted dirt tracks that wound through dry forest, open meadows, and rocky outcroppings. Every so often, our driver stopped at the sight of antelope, sambar deer, or a quick-moving mongoose. Channeling David Attenborough, I narrated for Candy as a peacock fanned his feathers in a slow, deliberate courtship display. We spotted tiger tracks pressed into the sandy soil, but no tiger. Admittedly, I was disappointed. Candy wasn't. Just jostling through the wilderness in the open air, she said, gripping the handlebar, had been thrilling enough. The next day, I experienced my own version of that thrill aboard an auto rickshaw in Bundi, a hillside town known for its blue painted houses and ancient step wells. I was paired with Chris, an accessibility specialist for the British government. Highly expressive with his eyes, Chris explained that he had optic nerve hypoplasia, a congenital condition that left him with a pinhole camera-type view of the world. I closed my eyes as we climbed toward Bundy's palace, perched above the town. The sudden jolting turns, the rush of wind, the blare of horns, and the shifting smells, spices, incense, street food, exhaust, cow dung, turned the ride into a visceral blur of motion, sound, and scent. I felt every break, every bump, and sway. Chris described it much the same way. I feel all the micro movements. It's like a 1970s fairground ride, he said, as we twisted up the road. A bit edgy, a bit bumpy. It jolts and pivots. It's got that amusement park atmosphere. As our group strolled in pairs through the center of Bundi, weaving between loitering cows and whizzing traffic, our local guide, Munish, paused at a street stall where a smiling man was stirring a drink made from a vivid green paste. He was, Munish explained, a government-authorized vendor of bhang, a traditional cannabis-infused beverage. Inexperienced but curious, A few of the VIs decided to try it. Later, Chris described how the hide distorted his sense of time and space. Lying in his hotel room, the hum of the air conditioner seemed to harmonize with the sound of the shower. Together, they sang. Over the course of the trip, I'd heard a few visually impaired travelers grumble that some of the sighted participants were being too heavy-handed in their approach to guiding, overwarning and overcautioning, as one put it. As we boarded the bus to Udaipur the next day, Susie announced that some VIs felt as if they were being passed around like furniture, with items taken from their hands as if they were children. The issue was clear. Sighted guides sometimes forget that their VI companions are independent adults. "I'm another human being," Susan, a VI from San Francisco, told me. "I'll say what I need." When someone sees themselves as a helper, the whole relationship gets skewed. Travelize promotes guiding as companionship, not caregiving. Someone to explore with, to share a drink at the hotel bar with, not someone to manage. But the lines can blur when you're also escorting someone to a bathroom stall. "It's a little like a complex dance routine," Chris told me. "You have to learn each other's moves and try not to tread on each other's toes. But you also have to give each other room to learn and grow." On our long drives across the Rajasthani desert, past sand-colored cliffs and craggy outcroppings, Munish offered insights into Indian society, the caste system, arranged marriage, the law of karma. "If I can't buy a Ferrari in this life, that's fine," he quipped, introducing the concept of reincarnation. "I'll wait. I've got plenty more chances." One afternoon, he shared a well-known Hindu parable about six blind men who encounter an elephant for the first time. Each tries to describe it while touching a different body part. One, feeling a leg, insists the elephant is like a massive cow. "No, it's a giant snake," says another, gripping the trunk. A third, stroking a floppy ear, imagines a flying carpet. They argue, each convinced his perception is correct. The moral, Munish explained, is that everyone experiences the world differently, and that no single viewpoint captures the whole picture. Understanding others' perspectives, the parable teaches, is part of seeking the fuller truth. I thought about this later on our train ride to Jaipur when I asked Candy to share some of her most memorable moments from the trip. One had taken place in Delhi, just after she stepped off the bus at Humayun's tomb, a 16th century Mughal mausoleum. She felt a small hand tap gently against her arm. Instinctively, she reached out and gave it a squeeze. The hand squeezed back. What struck her was a texture, rougher than any child's hand she'd ever touched. She realized it must have belonged to a young beggar. For Candy, that brief moment of contact was transporting, a brush with the unfamiliar. "I just wanted to hang out with them and find out as much as I could about their lives," she told me. What had shaped those hands? What had they endured? What did survival look like day to day? It reminded me of something Mr. Lateef told me about the difference between how blind and sighted people experience travel. For blind travelers, it's like reading a book. For sighted ones, it's more like watching a film. Sighted people tend to rely on immediate visual cues, architecture, color, landscape, forming quick, vivid impressions, like a movie that lays everything out on the screen. For blind travelers, Mr. Lateef explained, the world reveals itself more slowly through layers of sound, touch, sense, and spatial awareness. It's a more immersive, interpretive process, like reading a novel where the story unfolds through detail and imagination. And the book, he said, is often better than the film version. On the last day of our tour in Jaipur, we visited a jewelry workshop in the Amber Palace, a hilltop fort of mirrored halls and ancient ramparts. Later, we stopped at a community-run elephant park, the kind of modest place where you can feed bananas to the animals. Susie guided Candy up to one of the elephants. His legs are about the size of your head, she said, and his eyes are directly above you. Wow, Candy replied. How tall is he? Twice your height, Susie said. Candy reached out, wrapped her arms around the elephant's thick legs, and slowly traced her hands along its limber trunk. I asked what it felt like. She paused. Honestly, she said, like a tall, obese man with a big, hairy leg. That was Sights Unseen, What Travel is Like for Those Who Can't See, by Andy Isaacson, April 7th, 2026. Our next article is from NationalGeographic.com. How to Plan the Ultimate Golden Triangle Adventure in Northern India, linking Delhi, the Taj Mahal, and the pink city of Jaipur, with detours for temples and tigers. This is the perfect route for first-timers. February 5th, 2025. How do you grasp the vastness of India? Within its borders are mountains older than human civilization, jungles seemingly as boundless as the ocean, an immense desert of salt and a city of seven islands, and with many diverse cultures and traditions, and just as many festivals to celebrate them, it's impossible to talk about the country as a single place. One trip is hardly enough to experience everything India has to offer. But for those seeking a starting point, the Golden Triangle, linking Delhi, Jaipur, and Agra, the gateway to the Taj Mahal, offers the perfect introduction. Aptly named for the near-perfect shape that these north-central cities form on a map, this popular route, commencing in the capital of Delhi and slicing through the heart of Uttar Pradesh and Rajasthan, has all the ingredients for an epic road trip. But what exactly makes it golden? It's because each city dazzles with its treasures, among them Delhi's ancient forts, Agra's famous mausoleum, and Jaipur's grandeur, all offering travelers a glimpse into India's regal past and spiritual core. We will continue this article next week. That's all for this week's World Traveler. I'm Leah Blackman for the Virginia Voice. This program is also available on demand at www.virginiavoice.org.